The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, it's Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hello, Matt.
Hello. How are you?
I'm actually quite good. I have a large stack of papers waiting for me when I get home.
I was just going to ask about the grading cycle,
and you just answered
my question. Well, do you do the top of the stairway motif, where it makes it to the bottom?
One of our esteemed colleagues, who shall remain nameless, apparently likes to take a little sip of whiskey in between grading papers. So
what do you think happens when the last paper is being marked?
I don't know, but apparently it loosens up this said individual a little bit.
It takes the edge off.
Yes, that is a direct quote. Mm. It takes the edge off.
Interesting.
Then I definitely know who it is.
The top of the pile or the bottom of the pile.
That's the next question.
Yeah, it's me. Who can't drink?
I think we need to run an experiment.
Well, you either get an A or an F, right? Those seem to be the two options.
Yes. Professor David Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, Matt. As always.
We're glad to have you here. Sorry that the lodge was a roller rink.
It's okay. It's
ice
part
rink,
of the fun.
Hockey rink today.
Yeah, it's part of the fun. It's the urban adventure every day. So
it could be worse. We could be in Buffalo.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a D, baby.
We could be playing football elsewhere.
That's right. Continuing around the table, we have our guest panelists with us here this week. Dean Will Wittig is with us.
Hi, Matt. Nice to join you.
Thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
Excellent. So
thanks
you've
for coming
gotten.
Back.
Yeah, thanks for coming back, we should say.
Brave soul.
Even though
that you are.
I could have bolted at halftime.
We're very glad that you didn't. We hope you're enjoying yourself.
I am.
We need to get lots of different profs here in rotation. If you think there's someone on your faculty who would enjoy doing this, send them our way. We'd love to have you back multiple times. Just say the word.
Great. Thanks, Matt.
Excellent. Across the table, wearing a very, very similar and almost Honolulu blue, it's Professor Roy Finkenbein from History.
Go Lions. But actually, I was going to comment, and you can relate to this.
Okay.
Probably one of my finest grading moments was when my oldest son was little and came up and spilled on top of a whole stack of my papers a glass of red Kool-Aid.
Oh, my
So it left quite an impression on my students, as you can imagine.
These things happen.
The crinkled, blow-dried papers with red Kool-Aid marks.
I was sure you were going to either say water or red wine, red Kool-Aid fits the bill. That's not coming out. No. That's pretty much for sure. Professor Jason Roach is here from Department of Communication Studies.
And I'm very happy to be here.
I think I blew the students' minds the other day. They were turning in a weekend, take-home exam, problem set, whatever, and just like all coming in bleary-eyed and bad driving in the morning and everything. It's like, oh, man, this term is really wearing, And I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. And they like gave me this look like, what do you know about what we're talking about? I'm like, not only was I a student at some point, but I'm on this side of the podium now. It's the same for us. And they were like, no way.
Do they think elves grade the papers?
I once had a student comment to me. They were surprised because they asked if I read every paper and every exam. And I said, of course. Well, don't you have graduate assistants? I said, not at UDM.
No. Not here.
I remember when my mom asked me that. Yeah.
And what did you say?
I said, we don't have a graduate program in philosophy. Where would I get teaching assistants? Of course, now I have one. I have somebody who does all of my objective grading.
That's cool.
My spouse.
That's nice.
Drew does all your dirty work?
He just does the objective, the true, false, multiple choice stuff. I do all the essays, but it's helpful. I mean,
you married a Scantron?
Wow.
No.
I want to ask Professor Dan Maggio of the first organization who does his grading now.
I don't grade. I don't have
I
to
know,
grade.
You want to come on over?
But I do miss teaching.
Do you?
I will admit. Oh, yeah.
Tom
nice
would do
to
your grading if you asked
yes,
him.
Yes, or my cat. I could hire a cat.
Well, Bally does. One of my cats does try to help with the grading, because if I'm sitting and using the lap desk I have that Heather loves, she'll just hop right up on it and sit there until she gets whatever it is she wants and leave little bits of kitty fur all over people's papers.
Mm-hmm. Red Kool-Aid, kitty fur. Mm-hmm. This is Professor Beth Oljar of the Department of Philosophy. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You You can tweet at us using at AskTheProfUDM or hashtag AskTheProfUDM on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. When last we left our heroes, we were going through some all-over-the-map questions from Amber Hubley of San Diego, California. We can continue with those. They seem like they are keeping us quite a bit entertained. The last thing that we had talked about was Emmanuel Rosenfeld, Maurice Strauss, and Graham Jackson are better known as who? They are Manny Moe and Jack the Pep Boys. And you guys actually got that one, so nice work. In what movie does Ray Liotta play a ghost?
Field of Dreams?
Field of Dreams. I'm really hoping Professor Roach is able to answer that question.
If you build it, they will come.
They will come. That's right.
If I walk through the corn.
Right. What NHL team narrowed down their final expansion mascot choice to what was actually chosen, its real name, the Voyageurs, the White Bears, and the Freeze?
Columbus.
The Wild?
The Wild. The Minnesota Wild. Yes, that was the
Minnesota.
Final Minnesota Wild. Choice of the Minnesota.
So can you give a brief
franchise.
History? Weren't they the North Stars at some point?
And then they moved to Dallas. Yeah. So they rebuilt the franchise
and,
as the
and
Wild.
And dropped the North.
Yep, uh-huh. Exactly.
They just became the Stars.
Right, okay.
Which makes sense. There's lots of stars down in Texas, you know, that sort of thing.
But there's just one lone star.
But there's just one lone star. Yes.
There are lots of stars everywhere, Matt, actually.
What state's first governor wanted to be called president of that state?
California?
No.
It's got to be Texas.
Texas.
No.
New York.
Nope.
New Jersey.
Is it an original colony?
It's an original colony.
Massachusetts.
John Rutledge was the name of their
Pennsylvania.
First
Pennsylvania.
Oh, wait. North Maine. Carolina, right? No.
Nope. South Carolina. South Carolina.
Oh, right.
Here, actually. Yeah.
South Carolina. He's Coonskin County,
yeah,
dude, right?
That is.
Rutledge? I don't think so.
John Rutledge. The Declaration? Oh, okay.
He signed, but I don't.
Not Coonskin Cap, dude.
That was Daniel Boone.
Or Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett, yeah.
What state has the highest bottle and can deposit return value?
Woohoo, Michigan.
Michigan at a dime. It's been that way for a long, long time. You got it.
They should put it on these things, too.
You just
yeah,
made
they should.
A cool rhyme.
Here's my dime right here.
Yep. I'm remembering the episode of Seinfeld where they tried to bring all the bottles back. And now that they have the barcode readers, you'd never be able to
Newman.
Pull
you'd
that
be busted.
Off.
Well, no, there was a situation about 10 years ago I remember reading about in the Free Press where, and you could see kind of Ed Norton and Ralph Cramden kind of figuring this out. They thought, we can make lots of money if we rent a semi and we fill it with returnables. This was before Michigan coded it, so the out-of-state stuff didn't get the dime back. But and then they drive a semi load full of returnables, and they're parked in front of a Kroger somewhere in Michigan.
Putting them in this machine.
And, you know, the legal limit is, although it's frequently violated, is like $25 a day that you can return at a given store. And they're there, and they're going back for more and more loads. And finally, the cops show up. You know, these guys end up doing jail time.
Oh, my gosh. Professors, what fruit has varieties named Bloody Plowman, Dog Snout, New Rock Pippin, and Leather Coat?
Apples?
Apples. They're all apples.
That sounds horrible.
It does. They're not popular.
Oh, my gosh.
Love those Pippins.
What city was Winston Churchill's mother's birthplace?
It's in America.
It's
definitely.
Mother
was American. Yep. New York.
New York?
Yeah. It says Jenny Jerome, an American socialite, was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Yep.
Yes, that's right. Which technically is New York. Which U.S. president once employed Peter Benchley as his speechwriter?
Nixon.
Not Nixon.
Ford?
Reagan?
What president do you think could accidentally read the manuscript for Jaws as part of their speeches? Peter Benchley, right?
Johnson, then, if it's...
Yeah, Lyndon Johnson.
Would be before Peter Benchley became famous, I'm
before
guessing.
He became famous, that's right. Yeah.
He's actually in Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
That was his inspiration,
I bet.
Peter Benchley.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's the reporter.
That's right. That's right.
I was going to say, I don't remember LPJ either.
Now, if you've read the Dan Brown Da Vinci Code follow-up that, without, you know, mincing words, was a horrible book...
Angels and Demons?
No. Angels and Demons came before Da Vinci Code.
Because that was a better
right
book.
After.
Wait, which one? The one from last summer was good.
The one from last summer was good, so Inferno. The one in between. The one that had to do with Washington, D.C.
Oh,
the question
lost
is
symbol,
the lost symbol.
Oh, yeah, that was
what
lame.
Material is the capstone of the Washington Monument made of?
Copper.
Lint.
It's not copper, but you're darn
gold
close.
Gold leaf.
Tin.
It's not tin. It's not gold. It's
copper,
not silver.
Iron. Silver.
Aluminum. Did someone say gold?
Bronze.
Platinum.
Nickel. I said gold.
You guys are killing me. You haven't said a single one.
Where's our periodic table?
Yeah.
I know.
Where's Kendra?
Magnesium.
It's made of aluminum.
Okay. Oh. I said that.
You did? I'm sorry.
Oh. That's all right. I'll speak up. When we don't have the headphones on, I got to yell.
I thought you had said tellurium.
I can certainly understand
Well,
that.
He is drinking this funny
well,
stuff.
Well, all the good chemistry jokes
it's all gone.
Are gone.
Yes, they are. Dysprosium. Charles Lindbergh, Harry Truman, Abe Lincoln, William Faulkner, Walt Disney, Sherman Helmsley, all worked for this government agency at one point in their careers.
Postal worker.
The Postal Service.
Yes. Nice.
And then they moved on up.
Yeah, they moved on up after that. That's right. Exactly right.
Can you imagine getting mail from George Jefferson?
Hey, Wheezy!
He moved way up in Lindbergh's case, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's true. That's true. What state produces the most hazelnuts? Also known, by the way, as filberts.
Hmm. Well, Oregon's got to be up there.
Oregon is number one. That is correct.
Nice.
That's
work.
Up there.
Very, Oregon very low. Well done.
You know, the best state of the 50.
That's
I'm right. just saying.
We have another set of questions here. Hello, Matt, and hello, professors. Or should I say, arg, mateys. Thanks for sending me your pirate-themed autograph, photograph, photographed autograph. No offense, but I'm afraid some of you looked about as intimidating as the pirates in an old Errol Flynn swashbuckler, although a few of you did resemble the guy in the Oakland Raiders emblem. Is somebody wearing a football helmet?
You were
I don't remember.
There was much buckling of swash in that yes. picture. Yeah.
At any rate, it's a cute photo. It's proudly displayed on my bulletin board at work. A few of my coworkers remember Ask the Professor from its days on K-Earth 101 in L.A.
Oh, hey, yeah, L.A.
Speaking of emblems, this next set of questions is called iconography. The great Paul Rand, who would have turned 100 years old last August, once said, "Good design adds value of some kind, gives meaning, and not incidentally can be sheer pleasure to behold." That being said, these questions concern trademarks, logos, insignia, things we see every day and we take them for granted. Let's see how much you know about famous symbols and whether you can get 10 out of 15 right for a passing grade. It's a mix of true and false, multiple choice, and straight Q&A. Good luck and away.
Come on, that's a deep plus.
Go! Mike Morris of Brea, California. Thanks, Mike.
For no some logical symbol?
Obviously great well, questions here. According to several sources, what is the oldest active registered trademark in the United States? Keyword, active. Is it the Coca-Cola logo, the Anheuser-Busch A and Eagle, the Quaker Oats guy,
yeah.
that's what it says yeah. here, or Samson's ropes, Samson slaying a lion insignia?
I'll go with Quaker Oats.
You know, it says it's the rope, 1884.
Yeah, done ropes. In by the rope.
Yeah, Samson
What's,
slaying
what,
a lion.
What product is that?
A rope.
Oh, it's rope.
Yeah, name brand rope.
Yep.
Name. I didn't know there was such a thing as a name brand rope.
Which I've never heard of. Apparently.
I usually buy the generic. Yeah.
When I want to slay a lion, I use Samson.
Rope world. I've never heard of it.
True or false, the CBS unblinking eye was inspired by the Masonic eye atop the pyramid symbol seen on the back of a $1 bill.
True.
I'm going to go with false.
That's false.
Dead false, it says here. Columbia Broadcasting System art director William Golden was driving through Pennsylvania Dutch country when he noticed hexes resembling human eyes that were drawn on Shaker Barns to ward off evil spirits.
Oh, okay.
After returning to his New York office, Golden and graphic artist Kurt Wise got together and finalized their design for TV's best-known logo, the unblinking eye. Name the only insignia in professional sports that's based on a trademark not related to sports.
Florida
it's Jason.
Steelers.
Yeah, the Steelers. Oh, Will's Jason, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Can't believe it.
I can't believe you beat me at that one, man.
The team's emblem is based on the U.S. Steel's original trademark created in the 60s and aimed at promoting the steel industry, much in the same way Got Milk promotes milk. The original emblem looks the same, only it just says Steel. The NFL team added ERS and made it its logo their own. Yes. Oh, by the way, bonus question. Name the first NFL team to feature some kind of logo on their helmets. Oh, we're going to have to wait until after the break to talk about that one.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I'm your host, Edwin DeWint, and today we have almost all the regular panel with us. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, man. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Wow. That's the first variation in decades, yeah. I think.
Oh, no, I've been working up to it.
Okay, all right.
First the mustache, then pleasure to be here. What's next?
Yes. And on
as
his,
always, as always.
On his right, the woman he can't keep his hands off, the Department of English, Professor Claire Crabtree.
What can I say to follow that up?
I don't know.
Hello.
Say it was okay.
Yeah.
There are people out there waiting to hear.
Was it good for you?
And on Claire's right from the Department of History.
I don't know any of you.
Professor Sarah Gravel. And on Sarah's right from the Department of English, also Professor Hugh Kulig.
Well, I will just say hello and leave it at that.
I think that's the wisest
You've done
thing.
Enough damage. It was because of you that we were whispering.
Oh. These were quotations, and you were to guess who said them. Who said, "Never lend your car to anyone to whom you have given birth."
Irma Bombeck.
Yes, Irma Bombeck, exactly. Philip Roth is a good writer, but I wouldn't want to shake hands with him. Who said that?
Somebody after putting yes. his complaint.
Exactly. And who was it? It was a woman.
Figures it would be a woman.
A writer. A writer of schlock, basically, now deceased.
In fact, one Jacqueline of
her
novels.
Yes, I was going to say one of her novels was just reproduced by a computer, or a new novel.
Oh, somebody's writing in the style of. Yeah, you could call it style.
Exactly.
Well, she's not known to have shaken hands with anybody.
No.
We are back with some great questions from Mike Morris of Brea, California. I can already see in my crystal ball that this is going to be a fantastic set of questions. We just talked about the fact that the team emblem for the Pittsburgh Steelers is U.S. Steel's original trademark. The bonus question is, name the first NFL team to feature any kind of logo on their helmet that was not a number, a stripe, or just a color.
The Decatur Staleys.
No.
Kansas City?
I tell you, it's a franchise that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh. There we go, the Decatur Staleys.
The Rams. Packers. They were the first ones.
The LA Rams actually put the Rams curl on the side. That's right.
I went to high school with, played for them for a number of years.
I think they were the Cleveland Rams back then, weren't they?
The Staleys. No, they were not. In 1950, it was the LA Rams with the logo on their helmets. Art Paul is responsible for designing the Playboy Bunny logo. Mm. Why did he choose this furry mammal as the magazine's symbol? A, because Hugh Hefner likes rabbits.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Stop right there. No.
B, because of the animal's indirect sexual connotation. C, because of a bunny's frisky and playful nature. D, because rabbits were Marilyn Monroe's favorite animal, and she was the first centerfold.
It's Hef.
B.
C.
I'm going F.
Well, why couldn't they all be true?
They're not all the above. Actually, it's a good way to look at it. This is sort of a check all that are true. I'll tell you two are true and two are false.
Didn't
Hef?
The two middle ones is correct.
Okay.
Sexual connotation and frisky and playful. Those are direct quotes from Art Paul himself. We have a couple design people at the table here, so that's kind of an interesting piece of trivia. True or false? Before deciding to go with the peacock, NBC once considered a butterfly as its symbol for color TV.
True.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's
why
true.
Not?
Mm-hmm. The man who designed the original peacock was RCA graphic arts director John J. Graham, because RCA owned NBC for many years. Graham wanted to go with a butterfly, but his wife suggested a peacock instead. Smart lady. I guess. In
sure.
retrospect,
guess.
Everything looks really smart.
Not
I'm glad they
choice.
Didn't go with an elephant. I don't know. You know, it's just kind of weird. Cedric Gibbons was one of the all-time great art directors in movie history and is responsible for designing two Hollywood icons. Can you figure out what they are? The Warner Brothers shield and the Hollywood Bowl. The MGM lion and the Oscar statue.
I'll go with that one.
Columbia's Torch Lady and the Capitol Records building. The 20th Century Fox logo and Grauman's Chinese Theater, now known as something else.
I'll go with say the statue, so
Columbia's
the two statues.
Annette Bening.
Yeah.
The Oscar and the
C.
What is that?
Believe
me. Actually, it is B. It's the MGM lion and the Oscar statue. Gibbons worked for MGM for about 30 years. His boss, Louis B. Mayer, was co-founder of the Motion Picture Academy that hands out the Oscars.
Smart
every
man.
So, yeah, smart lady. Speaking of Columbia Pictures' trademark, a new federal law that was enacted in the early 1940s. New. Okay. In the 1940s, forced the studio to alter her appearance. Why was that?
She looked too much like the Statue of Liberty.
You're in the wheelhouse.
So now she
only
looks like Annette Bening.
Now she does look like Annette Bening.
She was
now
too bosomy. I don't know.
No, no, but it's not anything
enough
like that.
Which
American
statue are you talking about?
Actually, it's not
the Columbia TriStar. Columbia.
Mm-hmm. So Jason said what?
Looks too much like the Statue of Liberty.
Looks too much like the Statue of Liberty. You're getting close. She was wearing something that she shouldn't.
A tunic?
A hula hoop?
Not a tunic, not a dress.
Pants.
A tiara.
A pants suit.
Wearing something that she
strapless
shouldn't.
Strapless, like shoulder straps?
1940s. She was wearing something that she
a
shouldn't.
A tattoo.
A bra? No. Underwire bra.
A nose ring?
Her tunic prior to 1940 was the Stars and Stripes. It was not a white gown. It was no longer allowed to wear the flag.
I was waiting for like a strapless or, you know, like show too much calf or something like that.
And people kept setting it on fire? What was it?
True or false? The American Red Cross emblem is a variation of Christian iconography.
I thought it was Swiss.
No.
I say it's true.
No, it's false. It's actually based originally on the simplicity of Switzerland's national flag.
Wow. Yep. Thought maybe the Knights Templar.
I believe that it is now viewed as the Christian version of those sort of things because there's the Red Star of David and the red, you know,
way to tack on later
crescent as well, but it came afterwards.
Johnny come lately.
Mattel's first trademark featured a little boy wearing a crown sitting on top of the letter M inside the familiar buttercup circle. This character had a name. What was his name?
Maddie.
Yeah.
His name was Maddie.
It was.
Are you serious?
Maddie Mattel. The toy maker made Maddie Mattel talking dolls in the 60s. Sadly, Maddie went away in 1970 and was replaced by Mattel's current and boring logo, which is a red circle with little jagged things that
Where'd
says
Maddie
Mattel.
Go? Where'd Maddie go?
I know. I remember
into
Maddie.
The big toy box in the sky.
He became a chemist.
Oh, yeah.
And he now teaches.
Call me Maddie.
At a university.
Matt's tie is kind of yellow.
Now I'm going to call you Maddie all the time.
Come on.
True nicknames are earned, aren't
he's
they?
He's still living down Matt Meow from you.
That's
from
true.
Years ago already.
That's
come
true.
On.
That was pretty
That's true.
Matt Meow.
Really? I had this professor in grad school that called me Matt Meow, and my friends kept repeating my name that way as if it was that way, and it was, you know, it was just. Then Dave started drawing pictures of me with a cat body and a cat head.
Wow. Is it any worse than me drawing Dan as Charlie Brown?
No. Okay.
That was cool, though. That was cool. Cats are not.
And Beth pulling the football away.
And me as a zombie? I mean, you know, get over it.
A London music store owner named Ivor Arbiter. That's what it says here. Is responsible for creating a Beatles icon. What did he do? The Beatles drop apple. T logo on Ringo's drums? The Apple core trademark? The Sgt. Pepper album cover? Or Paul McCartney's violin-shaped bass?
C.
The Apple.
I would go with the
icon.
Apple.
I'm going to go with the Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're all dead wrong.
Oh, the dart.
The drop T on Ringo's drums.
Oh, no
the original.
Kidding.
Yeah, it says here, it's Ringo Starr and Brian Epstein paid a visit to Drum City in April 1963 to purchase a new Ludwig set from Arbiter. Just before they left, Epstein told Arbiter the Ludwig name had to remain as part of the distribution deal. Brian also gave him £5 to create a new Beatles logo on the drum head. Arbiter hurriedly sketched the familiar drop T logo on a piece of paper and painted on the drum. There you go, in like 2 seconds.
Wow, he must have been like Dave Chow.
His rates were better.
True or false? Xerox, like Kodak, was a word that had no actual meaning before it became a trademark.
True.
That seems like it's got to be true.
Nope, it's false.
I'm guessing it's an acronym.
Yeah, you know, like, it's not an acronym either. Xerography is actually a Latin word, which is a combination of the word, or pardon me,
is
Latin.
It
it's Greek.
Or something like
that means dry writing. Dry yep.
Okay.
Yep. Huh. Kodak was coined by home photography pioneer George Eastman because he liked the word. That is very different. Earlier we mentioned designing legend Paul Rand, who in 1966 was hired to redesign a certain automaker's logo. The newer stylized insignia was eventually rejected because it was too radical a change from the previous logo. Who was the automaker? GM, Chrysler, Ford, American Motors?
I'm going to go Ford.
Yeah, everybody jumped on that one. Henry Ford said the second. Oh, Henry Ford the second. Sorry. The second he saw the new logo. Oh, no. It's Henry Ford the second. Saw the new logo and immediately turned it down. Ford reportedly said, if the old trademark was good enough for his grandfather, it was good enough for him. Just Google rejected Paul Rand Ford trademark if you'd like to take a look at it. I would like to take a look at it. I want to know what that
you
is.
You got to have that stylized F, though.
Yeah,
I remember
a big deal.
I was with my dad could oval. Draw it perfectly. It was. Yep. I always just thought that was an awesome skill.
Yep. Kind of
went with being an engineer or something, you know.
President Theodore Roosevelt actually coined a famous slogan and registered trademark that's still famous today. What is it?
The buck stops here.
You know, it says here our choices are good to the last drop.
Mm-mm, from Maxwell
good.
House?
When it rains, it pours. The beer that made Milwaukee famous.
When it rains, it pours?
No. No.
But what were the first two?
Good to the last drop. Mm-mm, good.
Good to the last drop.
It says here it's good to the last drop.
Yeah, nice.
Maxwell House.
According to the 1964 book, Why Did They Name It? Teddy was staying in Nashville when he started drinking some coffee that was brewed at a nearby local hotel called the Maxwell House.
What a shock.
When the hostess asked Roosevelt if he'd like another cup, he said, delighted, it's good to the last drop. The rest is history. Teddy, is there anything you didn't do?
Wow.
Why does Apple Computer use an apple for its trademark? I don't know. I couldn't even say it without laughing.
Steve Jobs is a huge fan of the Beatles.
Nope.
What?
That is not what it says here.
And it's not because it was Mac.
That came second. Yeah.
Jobs was a big fan of someone in the area of philosophical computing that had something to do with an apple. The idea of computing. Does anybody know about... Well, I can't give it away.
Turing?
It's Turing. It's Alan Turing, who, for the record, in much the same way as Wallace Carruthers, who turned 37, and said, I invented nylon, that's good enough, and immediately killed himself. Turing commits suicide by eating a poisoned apple.
Oh, okay.
And it pays tribute to British computer science pioneer
coming up
Turing.
The Turing test?
The Turing test to see if we know what is consciousness or not. That is right.
That is quite a piece of trivia.
Which, by the way, there are some things available for free on the internet that will scare the pants off of you how close they are to passing the Turing test.
And
Google that,
go.
Ladies and gentlemen. But now it's time for us to say goodbye, Professor Oljar.
Bye.
Professor Maggio.
Would I pass the Turing test?
Yes. Professor Roach.
Goodbye.
Professor Finkenbein.
I flunked.
Dean Wittig.
I'm out.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Hill Vasquez.
I think I need an emblem.
And now, these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
I don't want to just read the book. I want to write the book.
I don't want to just work for the company. I want to own the company.
I don't want to just live in the building. I want to design the building.
To some, those might sound like rather lofty goals, maybe a little out of reach. At University of Detroit Mercy, those are the people we want. The big thinkers, the dreamers, because those are the people who make things happen. Great things for themselves and others. And if you're one of them, UDM will make it happen for you. Call 1-800-635-5020 today or apply online at www.udmercy.edu, University of Detroit Mercy. We want great things for you.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.